happens. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
It does seem like there's a lot of chaos in Donald Trump's Washington.
Virginia's Democratic Senator Mark Warner summing up a day that included new legal roadblocks for the president's controversial new agenda. Correspondent Naomi Ruckham reports on a ruling that pauses the administration's buyout plan for government employees.
Federal civilian workers now have until Monday night to decide if they want to step down under President Donald Trump's deferred resignation offer. A federal judge in Boston temporarily halted the program as he also considers a legal challenge from unions. The White House press secretary says tens of thousands of federal employees have already accepted the offer of full pay and benefits through September 30th.
Sources tell CBS News there are plans to cut the number of workers at USAID from thousands to fewer than 300. Overnight, the administration appealed the ruling of a federal judge in Seattle, temporarily blocking President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship for children born in the U.S. to undocumented parents. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown.
We do not have a king. We have a president who must abide by the laws. And if they want to amend the Constitution, there is a process by which to do that.
The White House moving forward with plans to turn Gitmo into a massive immigration detention complex. CBS's Stacey Lynn.
According to DHS officials, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem is planning on visiting Guantanamo Bay today to assess the administration's efforts to convert the U.S. naval base into a large-scale detention center that can hold as many as 30,000 migrants.
Officials in Alaska are searching for a small plane carrying nine passengers and the pilot that disappeared on its way to Nome yesterday afternoon. White Mountain Fire Chief Jack Adams says the weather was bad.
Zero visibility. Basically, you can't see anything from the air or the ground.
The NTSB and state troopers say they're working to identify the plane's last known coordinates. Southern California Edison says it's investigating whether its equipment may have played a role in last month's deadly L.A. wildfires, including the Eaton Fire. That killed at least 17 people. A surprise in the NFL.
And the AP Most Valuable Player presented by Invisalign is Josh Allen.
Okay.
Buffalo Bills quarterback squeaked out a win over the Ravens' Lamar Jackson. Here's Allen.
I know this is an individual award and it says most valuable player on it, but I think it's derived from team success and I love my team.
S&P futures down 2. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Max Inc. has a super show this weekend. Join us as we welcome The Flavor That Kills, Rob Dees and the Steepwater Band. Plus, we'll talk weather with Rippyology. Saturday and Sunday evening at 6, it's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
We have some snow on the way late tonight through most of Saturday. It's not going to be windy, but we could get 4 to 6 inches of accumulation by the time everything winds down Saturday evening. Today, partly cloudy with increasing clouds late this afternoon. Our high today, 23. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now, 6.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Thomas Crapper Day, the guy that invented the toilet, and that's why they call it the crapper. This guy created a legendary device, the turlet,
yep.
And we rewarded him by naming said turds after this guy's last name. That wasn't the case for Phil Orgasm. That didn't stick. But for whatever reason, Tom Crapper, this is your day. Rejoice. We'll all have one in your honor.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me this week as we talk to my friend and national figure Adam Kinzinger in what will be certain to be an incredible conversation.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Hoff along with you on a Friday, and you're listening to the Midwest Farm Report. My gosh, yesterday was slicker than you know what. I hope everyone was able to get to the Wisconsin Corn Soy Expo and Wisconsin Dells safely. People were also returning home from the Wisconsin Potato and Vegetable Growers Conference in Stevens Point. If you're on the road today traveling to and from winter conferences and meetings, it looks a lot better. A lot less wind and not as much chance for precipitation. We'll have more details with our ag meteorologist, Stu Muck, in about 15 minutes. After the show today, I'll be heading up to the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center to MC the Wisconsin Corn Soy Expo. I'm excited to see you there and discuss the topics that are pertinent to your bottom line, like the markets, but also pertinent to the holistic success of your business, like your mental health. The show wraps up today at 3 o'clock. The political environment is going to take center stage this morning as we discuss trade policy for dairy and potatoes later this hour. I'm also excited to feature a Century Farm from my neck of the woods up in Cadott. The Mocha family was recognized by the state of Wisconsin. And just a reminder, the Century and Sesquicentennial farm applications are due March 1st. It's all right here.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
You may know Rural Mutual Insurance as the number one farm insurer, but did you know they also offer a competitive home, auto, business, and life insurance? They make it convenient to bundle your insurance while saving you time and money. Visit ruralmutual.com to learn more.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
As a dairy farmer, you depend on your milk receiver pump. McFinn Technologies of Kenosha introduces the impressive Bopeller pump. It's quieter, there's lower maintenance, as the seals last much longer than your old milk receiver pump. It offers a more powerful cleaning cycle with higher velocities, and it doesn't degrade the quality of your milk. Ask your dealer for the Bopeller milk receiver pump, patented by McFinn Technologies, an American company committed to providing a better product for the dairy industry.
After this week, I think we're all familiar with the word tariff. The talk about trade wars continues to evolve by the day. I'm Stephanie Hoff from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison. The Trump administration plans on using tariffs, which are higher taxes on foreign goods, as a negotiation tool to benefit U.S. consumers. The hiccups could come into play if our trading partners retaliate with their own tariffs. That matters to dairy farmers. Chuck Nicholson is an associate professor in agricultural economics and dairy science at UW-Madison. He's created some models to show what the cost could be for a Wisconsin dairy farm if our top trading partners retaliated.
There can be some benefits to the U.S. populations of having those tariffs in place, but most of those are not the kind of benefits that are going to accrue to folks working in agricultural supply chains from the input suppliers on through the retail stores. So what we're looking at in terms of the context is really our three major export destinations for dairy products are Mexico, Canada, and China. So if we were to do some things with our trade policy towards those three countries, and they do some things back to us with trade policy, that can actually be rather detrimental to our possibilities to selling into those export markets. And to kind of underscore the importance of those, about 40% of all of the dairy product exports by value goes to those three markets. So those are really vitally important for not just now and in the short term, but for our future growth opportunities.
Is dairy something that the federal government necessarily puts a lot of weight onto? I mean, it's pretty small potatoes if you total up all the other industries that have products moving in and out.
Yeah, I mean, dairy is about a $9 billion a year export value for the United States, which most of us would agree is a pretty important value. Anybody would like to have $9 million or something every year. If you put that into the context, though, of the total value of agricultural exports, dairy is a fairly small share of those because we're a big exporter of corn, soybean, other grains, sometimes even cattle and genetics. If you put that into the even broader context of the total exports that we have of all different kinds of products coming out of the U.S., you know, dairy would barely show up on the bar chart for that. So for our industry, for the dairy industry in Wisconsin and nationally, exports are a pretty big deal. They're a major source of revenue for us that we don't want to go away. Whether or not that $9 billion a year is kind of enough to get the attention of policymakers in Washington is a little bit of an interesting question. I guess the other part of this, though, is it's important to think about what the attention that our policymakers are going to pay to dairy. But it's maybe even more important to think about what policymakers in other countries are going to do in terms of paying attention to dairy, because their decisions about those retaliatory tariffs are going to be the things that matter. And I think we learned in our experience in a previous Trump administration that other countries know that agriculture is kind of a particularly politically sensitive place where they can try to get back at us. And so whatever we do, they may retaliate in a way that's a little bit stronger and bigger in agriculture and dairy because they know that's something that gets people's attention in the United States.
Have you been able to model that, what that could look like, and maybe the hit that the U.S. would take if we did have retaliatory tariffs?
Yeah, sure. So I have done some modeling work trying to look at three areas of concern that I see with the policy ideas, and I think they're really just ideas at this point that have been put forward. One of those is related to tariffs. Another is really related to what happens with the availability of labor on dairy farms and in the rest of the dairy supply chain. And the third is on the amount of money that we spend on food nutrition programs. On the tariff issue specifically, if I can think about the kinds of numbers that we're looking at here, if we impose tariffs on those countries and they retaliated against us, we're looking at a fairly significant nationwide reduction in the net farm income, that is the profits that farms earn on dairy. That looks like about $2.5 billion or about 8% reduction. So that'd be like getting an 8% cut in your paycheck kind of thing. On an average size Wisconsin dairy farm, that would mean about $35,000 over the course of the next 4 years or so, another about 8%. Significant reduction in key export and domestic markets for us for cheese, something like about a $6 billion reduction in the value of cheese sales. And importantly, particularly given that this is a focus on trade, a nearly one-third reduction in the total value of our dairy product exports going out of the United States. So when we think about the kinds of impacts that this could have, generally speaking, they're pretty important in terms of reducing farm incomes and reducing the total value of the dairy stream that's going out of the United States.
As you said, tariffs can be a tool to get the U.S. what it wants. Have you been able to model what a positive outcome could be if President Trump achieves his goal with tariffs?
Well, so there's a potential possibility for some positive impacts on dairy, at least in some ways, because as I mentioned earlier, we export a lot of grains that can be fed to dairy cattle, so corn and soybeans. If those products also see retaliatory tariffs and a lot more of that product is kept at home, then feed costs, the prices for those commodities and therefore feed costs on a dairy farm for a dairy ration could go down. And it depends a little bit on which of those effects is bigger. We're sort of taking away demand in the marketplace for dairy products. That's going to mean lower dairy product prices, lower farm milk prices. But if we also have lower feed costs, that could be an offsetting effect to a certain amount. And it really depends on which one of those effects ends up being a little bit stronger. Is it that falling milk prices or is it the falling feed costs? not quite a race to the bottom, but it would make a difference on how those two things were affected.
You also mentioned labor and worker shortages putting a squeeze on the farm economy. But the third point you said, cuts to food and nutrition programs.
We kind of have this idea that the things that are in the farm bill include those food and nutrition programs. And they're actually like 3/4 of the total amount of money that we spend on the farm bill is actually for things that is not directly related to farms. It's related to allowing people to purchase more food. So there's a broad set of potential impacts if we cut those programs. What I've done is try and look at, particularly for dairy, the kind of impacts that cutting those programs by a significant amount would have on dairy product demand. And many people maybe don't know, but a lot of fluid milk products in the U.S. and a lot of cheese are moved through a variety of those food and nutrition programs that have been under discussion for some pretty significant cuts. And that means the school breakfast and lunch programs move a little bit less than 10% of the total fluid milk that is sold in the United States. So these are really actually pretty important programs. And if we cut them in ways that have been discussed, we can see some similar kind of impacts to what we might see with the tariff. We see some pretty significant reductions in farm income. You're dropping the demand for dairy products in the U.S. That is not going to help with farm milk prices, not going to help with the value of sales. Might provide a little bit of a boost for export sales because we're going to have lower domestic prices, and that allows us to be a little bit more competitive in global markets. But the overall net impact of making changes, making cuts to those programs, is pretty important because of the demand role that they play for dairy products.
Chuck Nicholson joining us. He's an associate professor of agricultural economics and dairy science at UW-Madison. He reminds us again that his models showcase what could happen if certain policies come to fruition, whether it be a trade war with Mexico, Canada, or China, or cutting back on food and nutrition programs, for example. These models are not predictions, but instead are meant to help decision makers in Washington, D.C. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Ready, set, go. Get in the game and be heard with WFHR's Playmakers. Join us 5 to 6 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're here to take your calls, sports takes, and ramblings. We'll have breaking stories, game day conversations with players, coaches, and you. Nobody ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Join the team here at WFHR 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, 5 to 6 PM Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for WFHR's Playmakers.
Keeping you connected to your local community with real news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you've never stayed overnight on a dairy farm, would you consider it? The Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association hopes you will and is working to position the state as the nation's agricultural tourism destination.
How can we grow agricultural tourism in the state of Wisconsin? Because all of our neighbors are embracing this and they're supporting agricultural tourism because they know it's an economic engine and it makes a huge impact for every taxpayer in our state.
Sheila Everhart is with the association and says from gathering eggs to corn mazes, ag tourism is on the rise. And overnight farm visits kick off as part of the NFL draft in Green Bay. Want to learn more, volunteer, or try your own ag trip? Go to WIAgTourism.com. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Jane Mattinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, 2.5 weeks into the Trump administration, we're going to talk to Randy Manner, retired Major General from the U.S. Army, and get some of his impressions. Don't miss it.
Mattinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
By noon, it was like it never happened. It was all gone. And I'm curious if any of that precipitation that we saw leading up to the ice was measurable, whether it was here in Wisconsin, or maybe the South is still beating us out when it comes to measurable rain and snow.
Well, the South has been getting more than their share, that's for certain. But I think we all know Wisconsin's going to start to talk about something here as we head toward the weekend. Yesterday, yeah, it was icy. The winds kicked up in the afternoon, but that temperature really turned up, and that helped to melt the ice off. Made it a lot nicer if you were doing something outside a bit later in the day because it wasn't icy, but it was windy. Certainly felt very chilly because of the strength of that wind yesterday as well. We have to talk about what's coming up, and that's, of course, going to be a low-pressure system building in from the West Coast. And when you look at Wisconsin, there's a bit of a winter weather advisory near Mauston and off toward western Wisconsin. And then you draw a line from about Eau Claire to Appleton, and there's a winter storm watch. It starts at midnight tonight at Eau Claire. Doesn't start until 3 a.m. when you look toward Green Bay, but sticks around into the day tomorrow. Further north, you get back into that winter weather advisory. Oh, that's Oconee County and north, further up into Lincoln County and all the way up into far northwest Wisconsin, the winter weather advisory. If you get the idea where that winter storm watch is, Eau Claire to Appleton, it looks like that may be the line of the heaviest precipitation. And yes, some snow will be developing, I expect, tonight and will last into the day tomorrow. Low pressure is still out to the west. There is some snow, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, just extending into northern Iowa this morning. Very light, just the sign of a little things to come. Snow more likely develops for us then tonight and into tomorrow. North of I-94, as we're talking, are going to be a lot higher. Although far southwest Wisconsin may see a little mix of precipitation as it starts yet late tonight or just into tomorrow. You know, a little freezing rain and snow may make it extra slippery in the far southwest part of the state. Temperatures doing their best to stay fairly mild at normal or a little above today and tomorrow too, but a little cooler as we head towards Sunday. And if we have some snow cleanup, those temps get a little cooler, back to normal or a bit below as we start heading into next week. And maybe another small snow chance as we look toward later Monday. I don't expect that to add up like the one that's moving in here for tomorrow. I'll have those forecast details right after this.
If you milk with robots, you know that cow flow is everything. Cow Corner Consulting helps you maximize cow flow by working with your team to improve your barn workflows, your feed management, and your system settings. Visit cow-corner.co to learn how. Cow Corner is an independent consulting company and works with all brands of robots. They're ready to go to work for you. Sign up for the free e-newsletter or contact John Gerbitz at cow-corner.co.
Join the Midwest Farm Report team along with Wisconsin soybean and corn growers at the 2025 Corn Soy Expo on February 6th and 7th at the Kalahari Resort in the Wisconsin Dells. Learn from industry experts on disease updates, cover crops, DOT standards, weather patterns, and more. Comedian Greg Warren will bring humor to the closing of the event. Connect with fellow farmers and share ideas among the breakout session, and don't miss the popular beer and bowl session. For more information or to make plans to attend, visit cornsoyexpo.org.
And please tell me, Stu, that by the time Corn Soy Expo wraps up today at 3 o'clock, we'll have ample time to get home safely before some of that winter weather comes in.
You'll be just fine this afternoon. I don't expect it's until tonight and well after dark before precipitation really gets going anywhere in Wisconsin. Our Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update, including that winter storm watch on the line of Eau Claire to Appleton, north and south of that line. The winter storm watch starts at midnight tonight at Eau Claire, runs till 6 p.m. tomorrow. It doesn't start until 3 a.m. at Green Bay, but runs till midnight tomorrow. That gives you an idea. Winter weather advisories north and south of that line. Today, we expect partly sunny skies, and I'd expect some low 20s in the far north, almost 30 in the south, and a northwest wind becoming more southwest, kind of variable, 5 to 10. Mostly cloudy, and the snow developing in the nighttime. And I expect the nighttime lows drop into the teens, maybe just at 20 in the south, and winds will be easterly at about 5. Clouds and snow Saturday, and a lot of mid and upper 20s, maybe even a 30 still in the south, with east winds becoming north at 5 to 15. Sunshine returns Sunday, Stephanie, about, say, upper teens in the north, low 20s south with the northwest breeze. Right along that heavy snow line, I'm thinking about 3 to 6 inches, Stephanie. The further you head north or south, the more likely you are to see just an inch or so.
And just to remind folks to let us know how much you get at our through our talk text line at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. That's your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Visit Compeer.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation, because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Thomas Crapper Day, the guy that invented the toilet, and that's why they call it the crapper. This guy created a legendary device, the turlet,
yep.
And we rewarded him by naming said turds after this guy's last name. That wasn't the case for Phil Orgasm. That didn't stick. But for whatever reason, Tom Crapper, this is your day. Rejoice. We'll all have one in your honor.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills is the AP's NFL Most Valuable Player.
I know this is an individual award and it says Most Valuable Player on it, but I think it's derived from team success, and I love my team.
That on NFL Network and Fox TV. Lawsuits by state attorneys general are piling up against Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports they're concerned personal data being accessed by the Musk team at the Treasury Department is being done by violating privacy laws.
They will file suit in the coming days to try to block DOGE's access, believing it's an extra legal or illegal attempt to potentially jeopardize the personal data of Americans.
With eggs in short supply because of bird flu, some customers are hoarding them. Mike Hahn went to Costco to stock up.
All the egg substitutes were gone. Everything was gone at 10 o'clock. Not fair to the people who can't be here because they're working at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Some Costco stores are now limiting shoppers to 3 cartons. CBS News Brief, I'm Michael Toscano.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Conrad Krieger. For your superhero fans and animation lovers, Invincible Season 3 has come out on Prime Video. It follows Mark Grayson, Stephen Yang, as an average teenager who discovers he's a son of the all-powerful Omni-Man. Soon after, he learns that he has powers too, when he finds out his father was actually sent to enslave the Earth and not protect it. He's forced to choose between humanity and family. The show has debuted with a 100% fresh critic score. Catch all of Season 3 on Prime Video. The first trailer for Marvel's Fantastic Four, First Steps, has dropped, seeing Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, and the Bears' Ebon Moss-Bachrach becoming Ben Grimm, a.k.a. The Thing. It's a fast trailer that shows what you can expect from CGI to the cast as the characters. Check out the trailer on YouTube. Fantastic Four First Steps hits theaters July 25th of this year. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
More trade deals by the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports. We told you about the Bucks trading 33-year-old Chris Middleton to the Wizards for two players, Kyle Kuzma and former UWM star Patrick Baldwin. Today, the Bucks sent Baldwin and some cash to the San Antonio Spurs. That opened up a roster spot for Milwaukee, so they traded third-year man Marjon Beauchamp to the Clippers for Kevin Porter Jr., a 24-year-old point guard. Last night, the Bucks added Jericho Sims, a fourth-year center from the Knicks, for guard DeLon Wright. Meanwhile, the Bucks beat the Hornets last night in Charlotte, 112-102. That ended a four-game losing streak. Afterwards, Brooke Lopez talked about when he learned that the team had traded Chris Middleton.
So I wasn't aware of it until Doc mentioned it at a film session, so it definitely hit me as a shock. You know, I've known Chris for a long time now, you know, I've got to know him personally. So I had to fight from tearing up a little bit, honestly. You know, it's an emotional moment for me.
That's the Bucks' Brooke Lopez. With Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us for a Super Bowl preview party with Brady Ewing and Mike Clemens, and also Peter Rapine gives us a humorous look at the week in review. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
We have some snow on the way late tonight through most of Saturday. It's not going to be windy, but we could get 4 to 6 inches of accumulation by the time everything winds down Saturday evening. Today, partly cloudy with increasing clouds late this afternoon. Our high today, 23. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now, 6.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Thomas Crapper Day. The guy that invented the toilet, and that's why they call it the crapper. This guy created a legendary device, the turlet.
Yep.
And we rewarded him by naming said turds after this guy's last name. That wasn't the case for Phil Orgasm. That didn't stick. But for whatever reason, Tom Crapper, this is your day. Rejoice. We'll all have one in your honor.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Night.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Thomas Crapper Day, the guy that invented the toilet, and that's why they call it the crapper. This guy created a legendary device, the turlet,
yep.
And we rewarded him by naming said turds after this guy's last name. That wasn't the case for Phil Orgasm. That didn't stick. But for whatever reason, Tom Crapper, this is your day. Rejoice. We'll all have one in your honor.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
People where he was playing.
Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I'm Stephanie Hoff. Thanks for kicking off your Friday morning and your weekend here with me. Whenever I fill in for Farm Director Pam Yonke, I like to take some time to clue you in on what's happening in the Old Farmer's Almanac. I'm looking in the astrology section where it tells us what activities or chores would be good to do today based on the moon phase. For February 7th, not much. There is one thing, according to the Old Farmer's Almanac, today is a good day to move, as in your house. So start packing and start hauling. Today is the day to get it done, according to the moon. If you're getting ready for the Super Bowl this weekend, I do have a trivia answer for you. According to the Old Farmer's Almanac, on this day in 2010, Gary Brackett with the Colts made 13 tackles, setting a Super Bowl record. Maybe that will come up on Sunday. If potatoes, French fries, hash browns, or tater tots are making their way into your Super Bowl spread, that's what our growers want to hear. Wisconsin is the third largest potato producing state. We're the largest grower east of the Mississippi River. At the Potato and Vegetable Growers Conference this week in Stevens Point, I caught up with Blair Richardson. He's the president and CEO of Potatoes USA. They're the group that's in charge of growing demand for homegrown potatoes, both here domestically and overseas. Blair says that the demand story for potatoes has been excellent, but there are some potential headwinds if tariffs put a higher price tag on some of those frozen foods that we enjoy, like those French fries. First, I have him remind us where the U.S. stands as a producer of potatoes compared to other countries.
So we're still in the top five or six, depending on each year and you know, what production is in different regions of the world, crop conditions, weather, and all that fun stuff. So we're a major player in terms of production and trade.
Who are our largest trading partners?
Mexico, Canada, Japan, those are our three biggest markets for potatoes. Canada is also our largest importer that we bring potatoes into the United States from, followed by the European Union.
Okay, so Mexico and Canada, those we've been hearing those countries a lot lately in the news, especially when it comes to tariff policy, potential trade wars in the near future. Again, this is all speculation, this is all potential, nothing's quite set in stone. Blair, maybe you can explain to us what it means for an American consumer when there's a tariff on other countries.
A tariff on potatoes or frozen fries, for example. We import a lot of our frozen potato products from Canada and Europe. If there's a 25% tariff on that, prices will go up by 25 or 30% to cover the cost of those tariffs. Okay. Most likely. I mean, that's hard to project, but that is usually basic common sense.
Well, if we think here in Wisconsin, McCain Foods is one of the largest frozen potato processors, and they're based out of Canada.
That's correct. So, of course, they wouldn't have to pay those tariffs on the potatoes they're processing here in the United States. It'd only be the ones they bring in from Canada.
On the flip side, if other countries were to put in retaliatory tariffs, what does that mean for potato producers here in the U.S.?
Well, that's when it gets even more complicated because we're putting tariffs on products that are coming from these countries into the United States, and they're reversing those tariffs on us. And so that then requires a realignment of where products are being shipped to, where they're coming from. The balanced result of that, I don't know where it's going to be. It's going to be disruptive.
From your standpoint, as you are marketing potatoes, looking for new market opportunities across the globe, how does a trade war, a potential trade war, impact your job?
Well, it makes everything uncertain. It forces us to realign where we're investing funds for on behalf of the industry, what we're doing. It doesn't mean we can't do the job. It's just now we have to look at different opportunities in a different way.
Trade war talk aside, what are some growing markets, some shrinking markets? Where are we seeing potato needs moving?
Well, in totality, the demand for potatoes continues to go up about 1% to 4% every year. So that's a good thing for our industry as a whole. It allows more opportunities for growers to grow and process and ship potatoes. On a regional or country-by-country basis, things are changing because of the different geopolitics that we're experiencing around the world right now. Some of the markets that we have traditionally considered very strong markets for U.S. potatoes are adjusting, largely because there's a lot of investment in frozen processing capacity in other countries like India and China, which China's been a big market for us historically, and now we sell very few frozen potato products in China. We still sell some, but not near what we used to, and that's because they're growing them there now and producing them there now.
Who is the U.S.'s greatest competitor on the global market?
Still Europe, the northern European countries. That's our biggest competitor, followed by China now. And Turkey, India, they're all coming into the game as well. Certainly in certain markets, there are very big competitors.
And then where are the regions where we're all trying to get into right now? Where do we see the largest market opportunity?
Personally, I think one of the biggest opportunities is right here in the United States. We have become a net importer of potatoes over the past couple of years as demand has outpaced the production of potato products here in the United States. Europeans have looked at investing in new projects here to meet that demand. U.S. and Canadian processors are also hoping to meet that demand. So demand's going up. Consumers love potatoes, and that's a good place to be. It's just realigning now.
Blair Richardson is the president and CEO of Potatoes USA. I've got some more Super Bowl food facts and a look at commodity prices coming your way. Don't touch that dial.
When it's time to choose a residual herbicide for your soybeans, you need broad-spectrum weed control that lasts. Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides by BASF give your crop up to 2 more weeks of residual weed control, providing 50% more control than other Group 15 residuals. The long-lasting herbicide portfolio protects your soybeans from even the toughest weeds while providing a steady growing environment for the entire season. Talk to your retailer today about adding Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides to your 2025 plan. Always read and follow label directions.
Just like some farm projects, they start out small, but they become gigantic. Bobcat Plus can relate. Bobcat Plus, Wisconsin's largest Bobcat dealer, has been in the family since 1991. They started out as one small dealer and now have grown to 6 locations. Butler, De Pere, Appleton, Eau Claire, Osseo, and their newest location, Kenosha. They offer new and used Bobcat equipment, parts and service, and rentals at every location to help your ag operation. Visit BobcatPlus.com. Bobcat. One tough animal.
I promised to Super Bowl food facts, and I am delivering. While Kansas City is known for its barbecue and Philly, its cheesesteaks, when it comes to watching the big game, nothing is hotter than wings. The National Chicken Council says Americans will eat 1.47 billion chicken wings while watching the Chiefs and the Eagles battle for the Lombardi Trophy. This number is actually up 1.5% from last year's game, or about 20 million more wings. National Chicken Council spokesperson Tom Super says they also expect an uptick in chicken cheesesteaks this year. He says if the Buffalo Bills can ever take the next step and make it to the Super Bowl, they'd expect an even larger surge in chicken wings. Buffalo is the home of the chicken wing. So how do you wrap your arms around 1.47 billion chicken wings? Maybe this will help. Laid end to end, 1.47 billion wings would circle the earth more than 3 times. That's making me hungry. Let's shift gears here and take a look at our commodity markets this morning. From Chicago, cash corn is down 2 cents at 4.93 and a quarter. December new crop corn down a penny at 4.68 and three quarters. Cash soybeans are trading 3.5 cents lower at 10.57 a bushel. November new crop beans also down 3.5 cents at 10.62 and a half. Cash wheat is down 0.75 cents at 5.87 a bushel. And July new crop wheat down a penny and a quarter at 6.08 and three quarters. In other farm news this morning, we've got just under a month remaining until the renowned United States Championship Cheese Contest. The Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association is excited to welcome dairy businesses from 31 states. These businesses have submitted more than 2,400 entries, and this includes cheese, of course, but also butter, cultured products, and dry dairy ingredients spanning 117 different classes. We're certainly looking forward to that event in March. You can find all the details at MidwestFarmReport.com. Speaking of dairy, Class 3 milk contracts are trading lower this morning. The March contract down 17 cents at 1989 a hundredweight, and April milk down a penny at 1967. Don't touch that dial. We're heading to Chippewa County next, visiting with a Century Farm, courtesy of Compeer Financial.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A New Hampshire Senate bill just killed in committee would have moved the state's four presidential electoral votes to a winner-by-district system from a winner-take-all. Nebraska, the only state besides Maine which apportions its electoral votes by district, is trying to end it. The National Conference of State Legislatures defines a winner-take-all system as one where the winning candidate's party, no matter the margin of victory, gets all of the electoral votes. Currently in Nebraska, which has five electoral votes, and Maine, which has four, one electoral vote is awarded for each congressional district a candidate wins, and the candidate who wins the popular vote statewide gets the rest. New Hampshire is currently a winner-take-all state with two congressional districts. SB 11 would have adopted the Nebraska and Maine model, likely in anticipation of gerrymandering a guaranteed GOP congressional district. But February 5th, the Senate Election and Municipal Affairs Committee recommended that it be killed in an upcoming full Senate vote. The AP reports that Nebraska's GOP is irritated that candidates Obama, Biden, and Harris won an electoral vote from Greater Omaha's Congressional District 2. Another legislative attempt to end it appears doomed to fail by filibuster, so state Republicans are preparing a ballot measure instead, hoping the voters will change what the legislature could not. We have links to the local reporting and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Max Inc. has a super show this weekend. Join us as we welcome The Flavor That Kills, Rob Dees, and the Steepwater Band. Plus, we'll talk weather with Rippyology. Saturday and Sunday evening at 6, it's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
In the northwest part of the state, and how the youngest generation is trying to preserve that family history.
My, oh boy, great-great-grandfather, Simon Mocha, bought the farm in 1917, sold it to his son, Frank, who sold it to his brother, Ed, who sold it to my grandfather and grandmother, and currently my uncle is purchasing in the process of taking over the farm. So,
do you know what brought your family to the area, or you know why they decided to acquire that farm?
Yes. So my family is Bohemian, Czech, and my great-great-grandpa Simon, he was born in Bohemia. They originally that family settled in southern Minnesota, but Drywood, which is the community north of Kadott, was almost an entirely Bohemian settlement. There was advertisements for the farmland being sold there that was all the advertisements were in the Czech language. I'm not sure why they wanted to draw the Czech people, but all of the families that settled there, almost all of them are Bohemian, and they're almost all still there. So that's what drew my family.
What were the early years like on the farm? Do you know what they grew? what kind of livestock they had.
So I'm not 100% sure of the, like, super original, but I know that it ended up being a dairy farm, and that's what it was for the most part. Always a small dairy farm, even at the peak, maybe 40 cows was the most that they had. And we still do cash crop, just crop farming. The cows were sold probably about 20 years ago, early 2000s. So farmland, just cropland now.
Do you have any stories from the past about, you know, weather events, wars, Great Depression, and how your family went through all of that?
One that I can think of for sure is the original barn burned down on my dad's 16th birthday. Yeah, and so... So that happened, the barn burned, and then they built the new one in the you know, soon after, following year, I think. And then just recently, in April, that barn also fell. It's about 40-some years old now, but we had a storm come through and take that barn. No longer any animals in it or anything, which was good, but just kind of, you know, days that happened is crazy. My grandfather... passed away in March, and so the barn then fell a month later, and I always say he wanted to take it with him. So,
well, the barn had a little bit of bad luck there, it sounds like, but I like that story. Did each generation make any big changes? I mean, improvements to the farm?
I know my grandfather, he remembers when they didn't have a tractor. He was born in 46, I believe, so he remembers when they were still doing everything, horse and plow. And we still actually, when the barn fell, found a lot of that old tack, which was really neat. And I saved a bunch of it. I'm going to try to incorporate it in the future. Oh boy, what else? My great-grandparents, Ed and Betty, the story went with them. You knew when my great-grandma, Betty, was pregnant again before she even told anyone, because Ed would start adding onto the house. And so that's how everyone in the community knew that she was going to have another baby.
Oh, my goodness. Are any of those original buildings then still on the farm, like original house or any other original buildings?
The only building left, unfortunately, is the house. We're super grateful to still have the house. I moved into that house with my grandparents and my uncle, who is buying the farm. I moved in to help take care of my grandpa about a year and a half ago. And a really cool thing is that the room that I stay in was the room that my grandfather grew up in and my dad. So... very cool.
So you're connected, you know, just through the space that you're living in. I think that's so special. Not many kids get to grow up on a farm anymore. I mean, what was it like for you to have that in the family and to have that experience?
So I grew up more in town. My mom and dad were both raised on dairy farms. Actually, my dad, this farm that we're talking about. But I grew up more in town, but spent so much of my time on this farm. I remember with my cousins, and my grandpa was just the best grandpa that a kid could have. He would take us around and do so much, get into so much trouble on the farm, whether it being down in the creek or out in the fields, pulling us around in the snow. It was just a blast. I'm so grateful to have had that space out in the country to grow up like a kid should.
What are your hopes for the next 100 years on the farm? And do you have interest in continuing that farm tradition?
Yes, I absolutely am interested in continuing the farm. Like I said, my uncle is in the process of taking over the farm. He has done so much work to clean things up and make things look nice. We're still doing crop farming, but as for me, I would like to see the original house sort of updated and refurbished. It's something that I would love to keep in the family, even if nobody necessarily lives there full time. I would like to see it updated and then have it be a place for family gatherings where we can put all of our old pictures up and celebrate all of our ancestors and our generations and have, you know, a place where people can come back and have reunions and things like that.
Does anything make your farm unique compared to all the other farms? Anything that we didn't talk about?
Each farm, I think, is so unique, and you really don't understand it unless you have been, you know, unless you're part of that family and you just grow up with that experience. Our farm was the home farm, and so all of our cousins and distant relatives, that was the gathering place. And so it's such a special thing that it's still in our family. I am so incredibly honored to be here. My grandpa, actually, he helped me fill out this application this year, and then he passed away a month later, but to have him actually help with the application and know that this was going to happen makes me so emotional and so grateful to have spent that time with him.
I think he'd be proud today. What do you think?
Oh, I think so too. He was such a big fan of all the pageantry and needed to make a big deal out of everything. Everything was an event, and so he would definitely have been down here telling stories. He wasn't afraid to go and talk to anybody. He would be everybody's best friend by the end of the day.
Needless to say, it was a special moment for Megan Mocha. She brought her grandfather's picture to the Century and Sesquicentennial celebration at Wisconsin State Fair Park. She knew he was there in spirit. Megan is the fifth generation on the Chippewa County Century Farm. If your farm has been in the family for more than 100 or 150 years, don't forget to submit your applications by March 1st to Wisconsin State Fair. We're collecting these stories at Midwest Farm Report, courtesy of Compeer Financial. Thanks for hanging out with me on a Friday. I'll catch you at the Wisconsin Corn Soy Expo today. I'm Stephanie Hoff.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Thomas Crapper Day, the guy that invented the toilet, and that's why they call it the crapper. This guy created a legendary device, the turlet,
yep.
And we rewarded him by naming said turds after this guy's last name. That wasn't the case for Phil Orgasm. That didn't stick. But for whatever reason, Tom Crapper, this is your day. Rejoice. We'll all have one in your honor.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Water stewardship in agriculture. Today on Farm to Fork.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
I knew a guy who was caught in a power takeoff on his dairy farm. By some miracle, he survived. Most farmers aren't as lucky. Keep those shields in place. Don't wear loose clothing around a power takeoff. And shut the tractor off before doing any work or adjustments to the PTO. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthShoreProductions.com. Minnesota is a water-rich state, and farmers there are working to keep it that way. Warren Formo heads the Minnesota Agricultural Water Resource Center.
Farmers take water quality, water issues very seriously, and recognize a lot of these issues and are working very hard to address them.
Formo says irrigation is a big water user in many parts of the U.S., but only about 4% of Minnesota's cropland is irrigated, according to Formo.
We know that as soils vary across a field, not every type of soil needs the same amount of water. There are several farmers in Minnesota who are part of research projects to essentially vary the rate across the field as that pivot goes around. And it's very new technology, rather costly at this point.
Formo likes the results so far.
Tremendous potential to save water, tremendous potential to make nitrogen efficiency better, and very cutting-edge technology that we're rather excited about.
Formo says dairy farms, for example, use cold water to keep bulk tanks of milk cool, and as that water warms up, it becomes drinking water for the cattle and used to clean barns. The manure is eventually applied to a field, providing nutrients and water for the crops. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me this week as we talk to my friend and national figure Adam Kinzinger in what will be certain to be an incredible conversation.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers.
Looking at the road that was laid before me.
From civil rights to business.
Food and food trucks is just like a cool atmosphere.
Science to music.
Speaking of which, this is why I spit. Express sentiment, a lot of cats on here.
I'm Terry Barr, inviting you to join us right here for inspiring stories all month long.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A reprieve for government workers torn between resigning with payouts or facing the possibility of getting fired. A federal judge in Boston has temporarily halted the Trump administration's plan to slash the number of federal employees. Correspondent Ed O'Keefe from the White House.
For those who have yet to decide, the White House now says you've got more time. You've got essentially until Monday now to decide whether or not you'd like to take what they're calling a deferred resignation plan, which would allow federal employees to serve out their time through the end of the fiscal year at the end of September, but not have to show up for work in the meantime. And if they want, they can find some other line of work.
We're learning more about mass cuts at the Agency for International Development. CBS's Stacey Lynn.
According to multiple sources, senior staff submitted a list to State Department leadership of people whose work around the world they deemed essential. But out of the about 600 on that list, Secretary of State Marco Rubio approved only 290.